Proverbs 30, chapter, verses 8 and 9. The wise man said, "Remove far from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me, lest I be full and deny thee, and say, Who is the Lord? Lest I be poor and steal, and take the name of my God in vain." There are pitfalls to both prosperity and poverty. He says here in this text, he says, remove me from the vanity and lies. Then he says, give me neither poverty nor riches. If he's rich, he would then might deny him. If he was poor, he might steal. So he said, give me neither. But I want to talk about just one side of that coin tonight. I want to talk about the pitfalls of prosperity. I mentioned this morning when I announced the subject that even though we are experiencing hard economic times as we usually, more than usually so, yet in the midst of all that, we are really prosperous people all over the world. There are people who are a lot less prosperous than we. And those who may either remember or remember their folks talking about the Great Depression, when we think about our times today, nothing compared to that then. But along with the prosperity comes responsibilities. And along with it also comes pitfalls. There are things that we need to watch out for in a time when we have sufficient even for our livelihood, and sufficient prosperity to pay our bills and whatever. We still, there are pitfalls we need to look out concerning. And prosperity, as I said, can be dangerous. And so is poverty. When we think about the poor, Paul wrote to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 6 concerning those who were servants or slaves among the poor class. And he said, after admonishing them to be content with the wages and so forth, which basically was telling them not to steal. Then he goes on to say, but godliness with contentment is great gain. He's talking to, in this particular context, he's talking to the slaves, which should be the poor class. For we brought nothing into this world, and certainly we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. But they that will be rich, he says, fall into temptation and a snare, and into foolish and hurtful lust, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For love of money is the root of all evil, which while some have trusted after they've erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Here he is admonishing even those who are poor that they are to be content if they have food and raiment, and that they don't fall into hurtful lust, and point out that the love of money can foster all kinds of evil. And he says they pierce themselves through with many sorrows. On the other hand, in the same chapter, he turns the tables and talks to the rich. And he says in 1 Timothy 6, 17 and 18, charge them the rich in this world, that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things in joy. They do good. They be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate. So whether they were rich or poor, he admonished them how to behave. If they had little, that was no excuse for coveting that which others had. It was no excuse for making, getting money their goal. And no excuse for having that love of money. We generally think about rich folks as having the love of money. But a person who is poor can have the love of money too. And they can try to get it by any means possible. But in any case, he advises both of them how to behave under those circumstances. And prosperity can be a blessing. As we notice here in this 6th chapter, I read in the 17th verse that we just read, charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, but trust not trust in uncertain riches, but live in God. Then he says that they do good. See, they have the opportunity now to use what they have, that they be rich in good works and ready to distribute and willing to communicate, willing to share that which they have. Now, as I said, prosperity can be a blessing. But the unfortunate thing about it is few will let it be. Rather than it being a blessing to them, they think it's a blessing, but in many cases it can be a curse to them. The more money they have, and the more means they have of sinning by use of their money, they sometimes run into social problems of lawlessness and discontent and permissiveness, personal problems of hatred and emulation and all of that. Read an article just a week or two ago about some of the lottery winners in this country. And after they got their money, how many of them, it turned out to be not a blessing to them, but turned out to be a curse to them. Because in their spending of it, they went after every pleasure that they could think of and just went wild with their spending. And of course, they wanted to share it with others, and they would share it with their families, and in turn, their families, because of their wealth, then began to use what they had in a way that would be shameful. And on you can go. But no matter where you stand on the economic scale, you have to be careful and have to make sure that you avoid the pitfalls that go with it. Sometimes we can have an over-dependence upon money. We think it solves everything. Like Simon, the sorcerer, he thought he could even buy the power of God with it. But prosperity brings us face-to-face with many a temptation. Now, that's what we want to talk about tonight, some of the temptations that go along with it. First of all, the temptation to measure success in dollars and cents. Measure whether or not a person is successful by how much money they have or how much money they make. And we sometimes do it unconsciously. How is so-and-so doing? Maybe one of your children, or maybe making a friend, somebody that you mutually know. How are they doing? Oh, they're doing great. Well, when we say they're doing great, usually unconsciously we mean they got a good job, they're making good money, and they are prospering in a material and financial way. And the more that they make, the more successful sometimes we consider them to be. And that's the criterion, that's the basis upon which we measure success many times in a society where we are a prosperous people. Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy 6 and verse 5, perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness. From such withdraw yourself. If you think that gain is godliness, he says that's wrong. But godliness of contentment is great gain. Real gain comes in the contentment with godliness. with godliness. But some have thought that gain is self with godliness. In other words, that's what it's all about, if we can just gain. That's what success is all about. It's just gaining. Well, we can be successful with or without money, with or without prosperity. We can be successful without it. He says in the 7th and 8th verses of 1 Timothy 6, we brought nothing in this world, and certainly we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let's be therewith content. If we're content, we brought nothing in this world, and we're not going to carry anything out of it. And if I spend my time and my energy and my life in trying to accumulate the things of this world, I need to realize I can't carry it with me. And if I am of the disposition that I'm constantly envious and jealous of others and what they have and wishing I had what they had, I still have to remember, if I had it, I couldn't carry it with me. We brought nothing into this world, and we're going to carry nothing out. And if we can be content and be happy serving the Lord in godliness, we can be successful even without the material things of life. And the apostles, for example, they would have been looked upon, as the world at large looked upon people, as failures. If you measure it by the world standards and by the standards of prosperity and dollars and cents, they would have been failures. In 1 Corinthians 4, in verse 10, we are fools for Christ's sake, he says. And you're wise in Christ. We're weak, but you're strong. You're honorable, but we're despised. I kind of think Paul's using a little bit of irony there. And tell them about how they thought they were. They thought they were wise and strong and honorable, but the apostles were not. But notice what he says. Even at this present hour, we both hunger and thirst and are naked and are buffeted, and have no certain dwelling place. Here's a man or a group of men that hunger and they're thirsty. Don't have enough to eat, don't have enough to wear, and an equity, and they're buffeted, and no certain dwelling place. We call that homeless. And labor, working with our hands, being reviled, we bless, being persecuted, we suffer. Being defamed, we entreat. We are made as a filth of the world, and the offscour of all things unto this day. That's not a picture of successful people, as we look at successful people. But when you look at it from the big picture, who in the big picture would have been more successful than the Apostle Paul or the Apostle Peter or others among those? So you can be successful without prosperity if you have the right attitude toward God, toward man, and toward things. Or you can be successful with it. Back again to 1 Timothy 6. That they do good, talking about the rich, they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate. They have in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come. They may lay hold of eternal life. If they have the attitude toward their money, their riches, that they ought to have, they're willing to share it with those who need it, and they're willing to do good with what they have, and they can lay up a good foundation against the world to come, so they're successful. Again, success then, true success, doesn't depend on the lack of or the accumulation of things and things that money can buy. Abraham was a very successful man. In God's sight, he was the father of the faithful, but he's also a very wealthy man, according to the scriptures. Joseph of Arimathea evidently was a wealthy man, but also, according to the scriptures, also a very successful man. and his attitude. But on the other hand, one can be a failure with or without this world's goods and without money. Revelation 3:17, though we're familiar with that in the church of Laodicea, they said, I'm rich and increased in goods and have need of nothing. They thought they were successful. Knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. With money, with riches, they were failures. The rich fool was a failure in Luke chapter 12. Oh, the world and probably his neighbors looked up on him as probably the most successful farmer in these parts of the world. But he was a fool because he wasn't rich toward God. And even after he had proposed to tear down his barns and build bigger and so that he could have more to store his wealth, your soul this night, your soul will be required of thee. Then who shall these things be? A failure with money. Then there are those who are failures without it. If, and especially if, the reason they don't have it is because they are lazy, won't work, or if they are careless and won't manage it, they can be a failure. If they didn't provide not his own, especially those on house, he denied the faith and worse than today. He may not have much, but if he doesn't use it, what he does have, in a way that the Lord has had him to, and if the reason he doesn't have is because he's lazy and worthless about his work, he's careless with his money and blows it. Fast it comes in, or he's going to be a failure. And he says, even as I've commanded you, we commanded you that if they will not work, neither should he eat. So again, we can be a success, we can be a failure. And we can't equate success with dollars and cents. Because whether we have or we have not, we can either be successful or we can be a failure, depending on our attitude and our disposition toward those things and how we use what we do have, whether it's little or a lot, and whether we use it for the Lord's glory in a way the Lord would have us to, or whether or not we use it in a way that a Christian ought not. Then there's a temptation to think of real needs in economic terms. To think that really everything we need, we think in terms of something that can be bought. Especially if we are cautious enough to have the money to buy things. But Luke 12, he warns us. A man's life consists not in the abundance of the things which he possesses. Life is more than economics. It's more than what one possesses. It's more than the things that he has. But the idea many times is that better things, those who can afford better things, that makes better people. And the way that you make better people is to make sure that they are prosperous and they have sufficient things in this life. That's the role, or the view, rather, of many of our liberal politicians. And that is, how do you make a better society? You throw more money at it. And you just keep throwing more money at it. And sooner or later, if you can get everybody off the poverty rolls, then you're going to have a society of people that won't steal. They won't do anything. Because they've got plenty now, and you can make them prosperous. But the truth of the matter is, rich people steal. Poor people steal. The poor man may reach in the trunk of your car and grab your tools and run off with them, he steals them. The rich man steals by embezzling from the top. And he's going to steal either way you look at it. And money itself, and the accumulation or the giving of things, is not going to make society any better of itself. And the social gospel is the same idea. The social gospel is, if you can better a man's status in this world, if you can bring him out of poverty and put him on a better a standard of living, materially speaking, that if you can do that, then you'll make a better person out of him. And that's the reason many of the churches over the country, they've given up preaching the old gospel of Christ. And what they do is they spend their time and resources trying to make a better society, a more prosperous society, by the charitable deeds, with the view you're going to make people better as a result of it. But it doesn't work that way. Whether rich or poor, again, they're not throwing money at them. Having the money is not going to necessarily make them different. The only thing that's going to turn people around is the gospel of Christ. Whether it's a poor man or a rich man, it's going to turn him around. And if he was a fornicator and an adulterer and all those things before, throwing money at him won't change that. But what will change is the gospel of Christ, like those at Corinth. He says, "Such were some of you, but now you're washed, you're cleansed, you're justified." So a rich fornicator, a rich covetous person, or poor fornicator, a poor covetous person, a poor thief, or rich thief, throwing more money at him, having more money, not going to change it. What's going to change is the gospel. And so sometimes we think when we live in a prosperous society that all we need to do is just take more money and push it out toward those who are not as prosperous. And if they are happen to be sinners, I mean are criminals in the worst sense of the word, that somehow that's going to lift them up. That's going to bring their moral and spiritual standard up. Well, it's not going to do it. Only the gospel of Christ will bring it up. And I'll tell you what, it'll bring up the rich man's standard, and it'll also bring up the poor man's standard. Spiritually. But throwing money will not make a better society. Whether it's done by politicians or whether it's done by churches, it's not going to make a better society. Because that's not what makes a better society. Changing the hearts of men and women is what makes a better society. And that's the only way that we can do it. So, and sometimes when we think about our children, we talk about we want them to have it better than we had it. Well, yes, I guess that's only natural. I didn't want my children to have to experience some of the things that I experienced very young and older too. Not that we were all that poor. Everybody else was too, and nobody knew they were. But nonetheless, we always think about what we want. And when we talk about something better for our children, we're talking about, in financial terms. And as we prosper and are able to provide more financial things for them, we want to provide more for them than we had. So we many times spend a fortune on a better education, or better recreation, or better tools than we had. And then we'll spend hours wondering why they didn't appreciate it. And hours wondering why they didn't turn out better. You know what the problem is? We probably didn't address the real needs in all that. When we talk about our children had been better than and better opportunities we have, we're talking about financial and material things too often, and not enough about spiritual things. And that's one of the pitfalls of prosperity. Thirdly, there's the temptation to purchase honor with our charity. We ought to be charitable people. But it's not a matter of our doing it to have honor bestowed upon us. Jesus warned against that in Matthew chapter 6, 1 through 4. When he talks about alms, the word alms there means charitable deeds. And he warned that you should take heed that you do not your alms or your charitable deeds before men. Those charitable deeds would include the giving of your money or even the other deeds that you do that are charitable or helpful to others. To make sure you don't do it just to be seen of men, but in order to have honor. Do it because you want folks to look up unto you as to what a charitable person that is. What a generous person that is. What a wonderful humanitarian that man is. And if he's got the money, he has a temptation to give it in such a way that he makes sure that he's given credit for it far and wide for that which he does. And there's always that temptation. But Jesus said, you don't need to do it that way. He said, but when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what the right hand doeth, that thine alms may be in secret. Thy Father which seeth in secret, thyself shall reward thee openly. And he just talked about how those who sound a trumpet on the street corner call attention to the fact of how charitable they were in giving of these alms. Now he's not saying it's wrong for somebody to know that you've done something good. It's not right. It's not wrong for somebody to know that maybe that you help somebody in need. That's not the point. The point is the motivation behind it all. And there's always a temptation that the reason that we do what we do by way of charity is for the notoriety and the honor that we receive from it, rather than for the good that it does, and for the fact that we're trying to please the Lord and not to call attention to ourselves. But we like for folks to think of us as great benefactors. But Paul said, though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity, it profits me nothing. Even though if it's even true, if you gave everything that you had, if you don't have love involved with it, he said it's not worth anything. We just sometimes we forget who the real beneficiary is when we do charitable things and when we give show charity toward a brother, sister, or neighbor. We seem to forget who the real beneficiary is. The real beneficiary of it is not ourselves. That is, it's not calling attention to ourselves. Not is the beneficiary altogether the one who receives our charity. But the real beneficiary of one who does it right, he doesn't call attention to himself by doing it. He just goes ahead and does it. His motivation is not to have the notoriety or the credit. And he gives it sincerely and from the heart. And he realizes that person needs it and they need the help. But he forgets that he's really the one who benefits the most from it when he does it that way. Not benefit in the way of notoriety, but in the way of blessing from the Lord. Look at Acts 20 and verse 35. I showed you all things, how laboring you ought to support the weak. And remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said, it's more blessed to give than receive. And I view it as I'm the great benefactor. And that person is owes me, and that person owes me gratitude, that person owes me notoriety, that person owes me credit for what I give him. You forget about the one that benefits the most from him is not that man, but it's you in the way of blessing when you do it right. And in Philippians 4, he says, Paul talks of those who sent once and again to his necessity. He says, not that I desire a gift, but that fruit may abound unto your account. So when I have that, and fortunate enough to have that to give to someone else, I don't do it in a patronizing way, because I realize that I am getting a blessing out of it. And it is a blessing to me when I do it, and I do it from the heart. We give because we need the blessing, not that we need the notoriety, not that we need the credit, not that we need somebody to point out how great we are, but we need the blessing of giving. And we do it also realize that God needs nothing from us. When we lay by in store for the Lord's work, we realize that God, it's not that God needs something for us. God will see to it some way or the other things go on with if I didn't do it. But I need to realize that I need to do it. I need to do it for my spiritual welfare. And also, I'll tell you something else. If I don't supply the needs of my neighbor that I have an opportunity to, or supply the needs of my brother that I have an opportunity to, if he's truly in need, if I don't do it, God somehow or the other will figure out some way providentially to see that he's taken care of without me, but I won't receive any blessing from him. So I need to realize that the greatest beneficiary of all is myself when I do that which is right with that which I have. And fourthly, there is the temptation to substitute dollars for deeds. Much easier just, if we've got it, just write the check. Or it's much easier if we've got it in cash to just give the cash than it is sometimes to give of ourselves. Now, I'm not diminishing the need for giving the cash and writing the check. At times it needs to be done. Sometimes they need it. But we need to know also that that's not all there is to it. And sometimes if we have it, it's just so much easier than getting personally involved in the situation. You just write the check for it. Concerning those rich, he says again in 1 Timothy 6:18, that they do good, that they be rich in good works. There's the personal involvement in it. Good works. Ready to distribute. There's the writing of the check. And the willingness to communicate. That again, and share. That again is the writing of the check for the giving of the money. But also they need to be rich in good works. In the home, quite often, it's easier for people who have the money to buy child rearing than to be personally involved in the rearing of their children. And often it's much easier to substitute money for hospitality. Easier to just write the check than it is to be personally involved and showing your hospitality on a person-to-person level. In the community, it's a lot easier to send the check or send the flowers than it is to weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice, being personally involved. It's easy to send the check or give the money rather than to administer personal care that you can administer on a personal level. As I said, sometimes the money needs to be involved. But we don't want to forget our personal involvement with those that need our personal involvement, need our help. I think about the judgment scene in Matthew 25:42-45. He says, I was a stranger and you took me not in. I was naked and you clothed me not. Sick and in prison and you visited me not. And he mentions it further in, on down. James 1:27, he says, pure religion undefiled before God the Father is this, the business, the fatherless, and the widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. That word visit there means literally to go and inspect. And the idea is going and inspecting and find out what the need is. Be personally involved. And then the best you can to supply the need. Sometimes it may be service, a form of service, it might be in the form of money. But you need to have that personal involvement in the business of others. And in the church, we see it the same thing. People, in a prosperous church especially, many times the idea is we pay the preacher. That's what he's paid for, is do our work. Do our work of visiting, our work of comforting, and our work of studying. But we miss the point. The point is, why do we work at all in the Lord's kingdom? We work for our personal development spiritually. The preacher's working, or the elder's working, or whoever it may be working, is not going to build you up personally. But you're working in the vineyard, doing what you can according to your ability, will build you up spiritually and personally. It's more than just getting the job done. It's a matter of being in on the getting of the job done to the best of our ability and whatever we can contribute. And we need to get the order right. It's first ourselves, then our money. In the matter of whether it's given to the Lord's work in the church or whether it's on a personal level day by day. First, we give ourselves, and then we give our things. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 5, he talks about those who contribute to the church for the poor saints. He says, and this they did not as we hoped, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and to us by the will of God in relationship to the contribution they were taking up for the poor saints. But they first gave themselves to the Lord, and then their contribution followed. In the parable of the Good Samaritan, first there was personal involvement, and then later there was monetary involvement. Look at the 33rd verse. You remember the story of the Good Samaritan, how that this man was robbed and beaten and left by the wayside, and how that the priest walked by on the other side and didn't pay any attention to him, probably because they had other fish to fry and didn't pay any attention to him. But the Samaritan came along, and let's notice what happened in verse 33. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and saw him, and had compassion upon him, and went to him, and bound his wounds, poured in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. Now let's look at all that together. He bound him, he was personally involved, bound his wounds, personally served him by pouring the oil and the wine on him, set him on his own beast, brought him to the inn, and even after he got to the inn, he took care of him. Was still personally involved. Then in 35, and on the morrow when he departed, he needed to go on somewhere else. He then took 2 pence and gave it to the host, that would be the host of the inn, and said to him, take care of him, and whatsoever thou spendest more, when I come again, I'll repay you. He had the means. He used the means, but first, He gave himself to the Lord. There'd been a lot of us, we might have gotten to the Samaritan and he needed that calf, but we just, for whatever reason or other, we didn't want to get that personally involved, that close to it. We'd have waited for somebody to come along that we could have hired right off the bat to take him care of and carry him to the inn and do whatever is involved if we had the money to do so. Well, this man evidently had the money to pay such one, but he saw an opportunity for service and he served. He first gave himself, then he gave of his money. We need to realize that we can't substitute dollars for deeds. Dollars are a fine, and they have their place. And we sometimes need to reach down in the and loosen the purse strings to help out. But we need to first be a people of compassion and to the point that they're willing to become personally involved themselves. First give themselves. And then let their money go only be an extension of themselves as they serve the Lord. So let's thank God for all the material blessings that we have and pray for wisdom as we use them. But let us trust God and not money for our salvation. Thank God for everything that we have and what God has allowed us to have. Be thankful for it. Use it wisely. Don't squander it. Don't squander it either in righteous living or enabling those who are professional freeloaders, even, who will not work, that I'm talking about. Use it right and wisely. But remember, it doesn't buy everything. We have to ourselves involved. If you're here tonight, anyway, accept the Lord's invitation, then come while we stand and while we sing.